Okay, topic for today, kashrut. Yes. Now, this is actually the first mitzvah that's given to mankind. Adam HaRishon is told what? What's
eat.
He told?
Eat from the ground.
Eat. Eat. Sounds like a Jewish mother. God says, eat. Esen meinkin. Eat. Eat whatever you want, except for this one thing. Now, the problem that Adam had was that he focused on the negative. He focused on the, except for this one thing. He only dealt with the negative and not with the positive. People feel that sometimes Shabbos as well. Oh, Shabbos, I can't do this, I can't do this. They only key on the Shamor at Yom HaShabbat without the Zachor at Yom HaShabbat. There's a lot of beautiful things in Zachor, things that we should remember, things how we can make Shabbos beautiful. Shabbos is the greatest time. We could spend all this family time. Go and get like once a year Thanksgiving. Okay, and maybe Super Bowl Sunday. And the whole family gets together, multi-generational get-together. But Am Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, every Shabbos, it's amazing. And people only key on the Shamor, on the negative. So now, the question is, why do we keep Shabbat? I'm not Shabbat, my bad, Kashrut. Why do we keep Kashrut? So the first answer, and the most important answer, is because God said so. Okay, it's a chok. We don't necessarily understand the reason, but we look for reasons. Okay, what are the two explanations for ta'am mei ha-mitzvot?
Reasons for mitzvot.
Or the taste. Ta'am is taste, right? Wait. Sometimes if something is ta'am, it's tasty, right? When we have ta'am mei ha-mitzvot, it gives us a taste. It makes it easier for us to do. We don't necessarily know the reason, okay? Or maybe there are many reasons. So we have books that say ta'am mei ha-mitzvot. And these are reasons, but more importantly for us, they're giving us some sort of taste for the mitzvah. Now, I've heard people argue that kashrut is for health reasons, and that is for sure not correct. Okay, first of all, lots of goyim are very healthy eating non-kosher food, and there's tons and tons of very, very non-healthy kosher food. So to sit there and say, like what?
Candy.
Think of all the candy snacks, all the stuff that you eat. It's lots of, like, think of the chopped liver. I don't know. Think of all the red meat, the deli. I mean, there's lots and lots of, think of how a hot dog is made. Okay, I have to stop now. Hot dogs are what?
Healthy.
You think? Okay, you've never seen how it's made. The,
there's a good YouTube channel.
To say that the reason for Kashrut is for health is certainly not the reason. So why are we supposed to keep kosher? So the first thing is our most basic need, I guess other than breathing, is food. How am I supposed to treat food? Some people eat like a pig. Okay? I find it ironic. Many, many from Jews will not, and myself included, use a fork that I used for meat to use for fish and vice versa. Oh, because why? Anyone know? Because it's dangerous. Because we can't have fish and meat together. If you're Sephardim, fish and milk together. And you can't even use the same utensil. Can't use the same utensil. And yet, the very same people have no problem pigging out at a kiddush, shoving their mouth, as well as going to the burgers bar and say, yeah, I want the 300-gram sandwich, burger with all the toppings. And that's not a danger, right? Somehow that's not dangerous. Mm-hmm. That's okay. But, using the same fork that you use for your gefilte fish to now use for your chicken, whoa, how could you possibly give me only one fork? Don't you know better? This is dangerous. Yeah, so look, I'm not saying not to do it. I do it. But if that's dangerous, just as you should know, the Magen Avraham feels that it's clearly not dangerous and no one has to abide by that. He goes, look around. People do it all the time and they're not dropping dead. So he says maybe it was dangerous at the time of the Gemara, but it's certainly not today.
What's the dangerous reason? I just heard of, like, oh, no fish and meat together. You just, like, wash much around for, like, an hour.
Yeah, right, you can't use the same forks. It says sakana. Okay, sakana. So I'm just saying, the Magen Avraham says, goyim are doing it all the time. No one's dropping dead from this.
Like bones?
Not bones. I mean, oh, you might want to say, I got used to eating meat without bones, and now I shove the fish in my... I don't know. But, like, so then you shouldn't eat in the same... But, like, okay, people do. But either way, what we have to do is you've rinsed off your fork or not. I'm just saying, there is an opinion that you don't have to be makbe for this. So if you see a frum Jew that's not using the different forks, don't freak out. There is the mugging of rum that says this, maybe more people. I personally keep that minhag. I don't use it, but I just find it ironic that I'll make sure not to have the same fork for fish and meat and then pig out at a kiddush. Or like I said, have like the double burger with the extra fries and the super large Coke and say that's somehow okay. Why is that okay? So this can't be the idea. It can't be because we're talking about an actual sakana. Probably, kashrus, we have to understand that our body is holy and this is holy fuel. Right? If you had a sports car, you wouldn't just put in any gasoline. You'd put in the premium. You know, if you spend that much money on your car, I guess you're putting up extra money on your gasoline. So our body is a special vehicle. It's our vehicle to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us this is the fuel that we should use. I mean, we know that food is related to many mitzvot. I have a mitzvah to eat on the 9th of Tishrei and then fast on the 10th. There's a mitzvah to eat. My kids are growing up. They knew that was the day I would let them eat whatever they want. It's a mitzvah to eat today. We get candy, cake. But just eat whatever you want. Yeah, it's a mitzvah to eat. Whatever you want, just keep eating. So, like, that was, I think it was a more exciting day for my kids growing up than Purim. Right? Purim, I'd say, okay, we had enough shalach manos, let's put it away. So, but to Erev Yom Kippur, you know, what can I say? It's a mitzvah to eat, go for it. So, we know the Kutzkaribi has a beautiful idea. What? Yom Kippurim, yeah. Right, we sort of have the opposite. Erev Purim, we fast. And then on Purim, we go nuts. And Erev Yom Kippur, you know, pig out.
So cool.
Yeah, it's Yom Kippur.
Well, I mean, technically, we're supposed to pass.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying the way that it works out. I'm not
yeah.
making drushes. I'm just pointing it out. The Kutzker Rebbe said, Pasuk says, we just had it. Anshe Kodesh Tiyun Li. Okay? We just read that in the Parsha. Anshe Kodesh Tiyun Li says the Kutzker, we don't need more angels. Kodesh Baruch Hu's got enough angels. He wants us to be Anshei Kodesh. He wants holy people. And you think about it. Where are the laws of Kashrus in the Rambam? Anyone know? Hilchot Ma'asarot. What book? Which of the 14 books? Sefer Kedusha. Okay, Sefer Kedusha. We're supposed to be holy people. We're supposed to be anti-hedonism. Hedonism is just giving in to all your baser pleasures. And that's that. Now, Gemara Numa, Daf Lamed Tet Amud Aleph, says a very scary thing. Ma'achalot asurot cause timtum halev. You eat non-kosher food, it causes timtum halev. Now, what does timtum halev mean? Okay, what do you think?
Spooky things.
So the Ramban says spooky things. The Ramban says some sort of spiritual weakness. Okay? You eat non-kosher food, it affects you spiritually. The Maharshal says it affects you intellectually weak, right? Which could explain a lot about some of the students that I've had over the past. But anyway, that's what it says about non-kosher food. The Maharit says Torah didn't aser it because of tumtum alev. Rather, right? He says, for example, Torah's not a medical book. Rather, since you violate this mitzvah, it causes timtum alev. If you remember, we said this last year when we talked about Shimshon. When Shimshon cut his hair, did he lose his strength because his hair was cut? Or because he had a mitzvah not to cut his hair, and now he violated that mitzvah? So you have this same idea over here, this machlokas rishonim. How is the timtum alev being caused? And the nafka mina would be, let's say you ate ba'onis or b'shogeg. Now, according to the Ramban, it's an onesh, you know. I'm sorry, it's not an onesh. It's rather cause and effect. If you accidentally have poison, you do not understand, you know, what it said. What is that skull and like cross? What is that symbol? I saw that in this bottle and it was stuff written in Hebrew. I didn't really understand. So I downed it. Oh, wow, so you just drank poison. It doesn't matter that you did it by onesh. You did it by shogeg. You ingested poison. So according to the Ramban, it's going to have its effect. According to the Maharit, so, no, It's only if you rebel. And since you did it b'shogeg or ba'onas, there's no rebellion, and it won't cause timtum alev. Now, what types of non-kosher food are there? Number one on the board, non-kosher animals. Okay? We have this unfortunate custom of calling all non-kosher food treif. Most non-kosher food is not treif. Okay? Most non-kosher food out there comes from non-kosher animals. Okay? It's a non-kosher animal. It's not kosher. Simple. Next category of non-kosher is nevela. What's a nevela?
Part of the body.
Okay, it is a kosher animal. Mm. It just wasn't shechted properly. It died of old age. It was hunted and shot. Okay, so this can be from a cow. Could be from a goat. But someone shot it, and now it's dead. This is called nevela.
Is it sinew of the cow and nevela?
No, it just be part of certain things you can't eat. I mean, maybe it would be considered sort of like a... Yeah, maybe it would be up there with like the non-kosher animal thing, maybe.
That's one of the first commands we get also.
Right. And the third is treifa. Now, what is a treifa?
Milk and dairy, no. Milk and meat.
What?
Milk and meat.
No. Treifa literally means it was ripped apart. Okay, so here's what it means. You can have an animal. We have a docile animal out in the field, and it's attacked by a wild predator. And it gets clawed. Now, a treifa is, I had a kosher animal, I shechted it properly. Now, I do an autopsy. And I notice that there's an internal injury, one of its vital organs, that would necessitate this animal, this would cause the animal to die within a year. That's a treifa. Okay, Gemara and Chulin lists 18 treifas, 18 vital organs. Now, the truth is, we hardly have any problems with any of these organs except for lungs. So the only thing that's really checked is lungs. If the lungs have absolutely no blemishes, it's called glatt. Yiddish, chalak in Hebrew, smooth in English. There's no adhesions, nothing. Now, how do you check to see? Good. It's like if you've ever taken your tire to see if it has like a puncture in it, hole in the tire. So what does he do? He blows it up, he submerges it in water, and he waits to see if there are any bubbles coming up, then you know there's a hole. That's what you do with the lungs. You take the lungs, and blow it up, put it underneath the water, and you wait to see if any bubbles come up. You see, okay, if there are holes. If there's a hole, so then it's treifa. Now, if I want to have an absolutely smooth lung. Very few of our animals today are absolutely 100% smooth. If you're in Israel, the hashkacha of the Beit Yosef, that's their standard. 0%. Now, here's the thing you have to know. Sfardim only eat glatt. Ashkenazim are allowed to eat non-glatt. What happens? Let's say I have an adhesion. I have like some sort of like scab on top of the lung. If I remove it, will there be a hole? So if I can pull it off, I pull it off slowly, and there's no hole, this animal's fine to eat. So the Ramah passes for Ashkenazim. You can have a lung. You could see several adhesions. If you could pull them all off and there's no holes underneath, this is a kosher animal. Sfardim say we only eat glatt. Chalak. So now, if you go by the Beit Yosef standard, that there's zero adhesions, so only about 15% of animals are kosher for Sfardim to eat. Okay? Only about 15% have zero adhesions on the lungs. Then there are other kashrus industries, hechsherim, that say as long as there's only like a couple, and we pull them off, like we don't want it infested, we have to go pulling off. But if there's one or two, then, and we could pull them off slowly, it's not the biggest deal, that's still called glatt. And you can have, again, like not a Beit Yosef, but you find some other kashrus organization, it'll say chalak meat, and they can get up to 60% of the meat, and the slaughterhouse will be glatt kosher. Okay, and that's why sometimes you'll hear different slaughterhouses complaining, saying, how do they have so many glatt kosher meats? I know what the stats are. I'm sitting here. So there are different standards what people define as glatt kosher. If you're makbid on this, you have to like ask. So what, like I said, Big Yosef, they go for absolute, and probably it's going to cost more money because they're getting rid of 80%, 5% of their produce. They're trying to make some of the money back. They're selling 85% of their produce to the goyim, so they need to make some of their money back. But these are like the different standards for glatt. What do you want to say?
How does the lung get so many like holes in it?
Animals eat stuff, and
or if they like eat something that is a, I don't know,
like let's say
something in the grass that you
and they eat, it gets stuck, it's punctured. Again, if it gets attacked, and it could be a lot of, you know, internal injuries. But otherwise, I don't know. But it's what it, sometimes it gets in the lungs, and a lot of them are not. Now, Rav Schechter has a whole thing about milk based on this, right? Some people asked him. Since so many of the animals are considered to be non-glatt, so then these are walking treifas. They're walking treifas. How in the world are we able to drink the milk? And it's the majority of it. And by milk, it's a liquid. It has to be batal b'shishim, but it's not batal b'shishim. It seems like the majority of them are not glatt. So Rav Schechter himself doesn't drink milk. There are heterim, and people come up with different ideas, who says that when the animal's right now milk being giving forth the milk, it's a treifa. Maybe it develops it later on. The old animals, we're not milking them anymore. And that's when they develop these injuries in their lungs. There are different opinions. The majority of the firm world does drink milk.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, this is where, if I've heard the idea of Rav Schechter doesn't drink milk, this is where it comes from. Because the majority, seemingly, of the cows, at least by the time they are shechted, are treifas. Okay, or depending on which standard, you know, a lot of them are. Certainly not batal b'shishim. Okay, another iser, is what you were saying before, is basa b'chalav. Now, here's the thing that a lot of people don't know. Basa b'chalav is talking about kosher meat and kosher milk. When I have kosher meat and kosher milk, then I have the iser basa b'chalav. Three times in the Torah it said, you know, lo tevashel gedi b'chalev imo. One of them is this week's parsha. Lo tevashel gedi b'chalev imo. And because it, what are the three Yisurim we learn?
Can't cook it, can't eat it,
and benefit. Okay, good. So, for example, I've had students that they want to become cooks. So, if you're in Chutz La'aretz, part of the stuff that you have to prepare, you have to cook milk and meat together. It's part of the recipes. In Israel, there are from places where you can do the cooking without having to do that. Maybe there are in America as well. I don't know. But so you can't cook it, you can't eat it, and you can't get hana. So it means, let's say I have a bas b'chalav, I can't sell it, I can't make a profit. Because of this, we have separate utensils for basar and chalav. We have separate countertops. Many people have separate sinks, separate dishwashers, separate ovens. Okay, these are all things that came up when we became more wealthy. When your grandparents were growing up, no one had two sinks. No one had, you know, two dishwashers. Maybe they had two ovens. Yeah, okay. At my house, we had two ovens. Certainly did not have two sinks. We certainly did not have two dishwashers. But today, we're wealthy, and we just make everything go, works out. I forgot who I was listening to. I was listening to a recording on Kashrus, and one Beis Yaakov teacher said, I would never eat in the home of someone who doesn't have two sinks. And then Rav Moshe Feinstein's granddaughter piped up and said, so you wouldn't eat in my Zadie's home? You know, so I'm saying, like, I grew up, everyone grew up. There was, you know, and now I went full circle. When I first got married, I lived in a small little apartment. I had only one sink. Then I had a house with two sinks. Now I'm once again back into small apartments. Living in Shalim, I'm back to one sink. I had to go brush up on all my Hilchos Kashrus, you know, with one sink. I have one oven. Okay, it works out also that my wife doesn't eat meat, so that makes life a lot easier. But other than that, still, like, I had to go through all of these halachot again, which were sort of unnecessary for a long time when everything was separate. And people do that, and that's great. And there's also, as we know, different minhagim, how long to wait between meat and dairy. I looked at my notes. I said M and D. So I remember in my house, we spoke like Yiddish words. We spoke up milchiks and fleishiks. But my wife's house, they spoke up milk and dairy. I said meat and dairy. So meanwhile, we get married. I see like a knife is an M written on it. So I think to myself, Melechix. Right? She marked it M for meat. So I messed up like our first week that we're married. And her line to me, I said, M, Melechix, what did you think the D was? Deflashix? I said, okay, got me on that. I wasn't really looking. But so we keep separate utensils. Very good. Now, is there a need for a mashgiach?
Well, you get in trouble in London where it's milk.
Milk and meaty, yes. Is there a need for a mashgiach? So you should know. Probably about 150 years ago, maybe 100 years, there were no mashgichim. There weren't that many restaurants either. But people ate at other people's homes. Yeshiva Bachram went to a yeshiva. They slept at people's homes. They ate at people's homes. Everyone just trusted everyone. What about today? If, let's say, I eat at my neighbor, she invites me over for Shabbos. So I eat at her house. But she also has a catering business. Does she need a hechsher? Or can I say, look, I ate at her house on Shabbos. Obviously, I can eat at her house, and not at her house, at the shul that she's catering the bris. Yes or no?
No.
So why not?
So don't we say it's more the fact that if you have like non-Jewish workers and stuff?
Okay, it could be so many different things, but unfortunately, when money's involved, people cut corners. Ain't apotropos lamamon. Yes. There was a famous case in Highland Park where people kept bragging, best pizza ever, and they found out, yeah, because it wasn't kosher cheese. Okay, fine. And then there was in Muncie, guy that was for years selling non-kosher meat out of his butcher shop. So sometimes people cut corners. This is cheaper. They would have gotten the kosher stuff, but they ran out. What's the heck? Don't be there. Okay, just to give you an idea, forget about the non-kosher, the non-Jewish workers. But in a vegan place, okay, vegan, we'd say, well, what could be wrong with vegan? 8 problems in a vegan place, let alone a non-vegan, just a dairy or a meat place. Okay? Number one, this vegan place opens up. They bought their utensils from another restaurant. They bought an oven. They got, like, you know, you start out, a lot of times you buy, like, some used, they got pots and pans and ovens and this. They bought from some non-kosher place. They didn't kosher it. Okay? So we're starting off with that. One. Number two, the vegan guideline, if you look on the website, says no animal products as far as practical and possible.
What does that mean?
I mean, we do the best we can, which is great if you're a vegan and you're trying to do the best you can, but it's not necessarily as great if you say, listen, I don't want to have non-kosher food. Third, wine. You're allowed to have wine as a vegan. But wine that was handled by non-Jews, we're not allowed to drink. 4, bugs. Okay? If you're vegan, pretty much the only thing you can eat is vegetables. Right? So, they can be infested. 5, bishul akum. Now, guess what you start saying. And if a non-Jew is cooking.
Bishul what?
Bishul akum. Akum is like from Avodas Kochav Mazalot, right? Means goyim. So, the halacha is like this. I'm not allowed to eat food that was cooked by a non-Jew. If a Jew is involved, this is what they'll have. In a mashgiach in a restaurant, a kosher restaurant, let's say you go to a Chinese restaurant, okay? And a lot of the cooks are Asian, right? They want authentic Chinese food. So there's lots of places, both in America and here, okay? So the mashgiach will do is make sure that he's part of the cooking. For Ashkenazim, it could be as little as turning on the fire. For Sephardim, he has to at least stir the pot or do something. He has to be involved a little bit more than turning on the fire.
Place the food on the thing, right?
Yeah. You do something, the mashgiach will make sure that he's involved in the cooking. So again, this vegan place, I'm traveling now abroad and I say, oh, I can't eat. I go to the vegan place. Not necessarily. Okay? Again, who's doing the cooking? Obviously the non-Jew. That's why you should know it's also a big problem to have a lot of people have like a live-in maid and a nanny, au pair, I don't know, whatever you call. And aside from taking care of the kids, she suddenly makes a lot of the food. I'm using like, you know, she could be a guy also. I know for example, my father-in-law got very old. So there was a non-Jewish caretaker that was in the house. So he had to worry about this also, him pouring wine or him making any food for my father-in-law. Right? So that Bishul Akam becomes an issue. So Bishul Akam, number five. Number six, Trumot and Masrot if you're in Eretz Yisrael. Or products from Eretz Yisrael if you're in Chutz La'aretz if you don't know if Trumot and Masrot were taken.
The big problem with, I think, on the last Shemitah cycle that, like, different stores would still sell were, like, import things. So, like, they said you can't buy fruits from, like, it was, like, Costco for...
Right, so you have to see, you know, where it's from. Now, when Israel exports, they usually take Trumos and Masrot, right? But Shemitah, some, right? So I'll tell another thing, pizza stores, okay? People sit there and go, what could be wrong with pizza? So you tell me. Yashan, yeah, okay, in Israel they're more makbe. Let's say in American people don't care, Ashkenazim very often don't care about Yashan, okay? What could be wrong with pizza store? It's a big thing you have to do. What? Even before that. Hafrashat challah. If you're not mafrish challah, right? They're certainly making enough dough, right? When your wife, your mother, makes a challah for Shabbat, so you have to have a certain amount to be, you have to mafrish challah, and some of them without a bracha, if you have more, with a bracha. Any pizza store. No. So anytime you're making, anytime you're baking a certain amount, if I remember correctly, I might not remember right now correctly, one... If you make, let's say, I think it's 1.1 kilo, you need to be mafresh challah without a bracha. 2.2, I think, with a bracha. So if you're making just some challah for Shabbat, probably not enough. But if you're making a lot, let's say sometimes your mom will sit there and say, I'm going to make a whole bunch and I'll put some in the freezer. Or not even that, I'm making a whole bunch because we have a lot of company. Okay, any pizza store, they're making tons of dough. You have to be mafresh challah. Most pizza stores will actually show you the burnt bread that on top of the pizza ovens. They're mafresh. They put it in the oven. They burnt it. And that's the hafresh challah. So you should see. They're mafresh challah. Okay? So you need that in pizza. You need that in a vegan place. A vegan place, also, they're giving you bread. They're not putting in eggs in it, chas v'shalom, because, you know, can't eat eggs. But they have dough and water. And you have to be mafresh challah. If you're not mafresh challah, it's not kosher. Right? Never occurs to anybody. If you're in the Far East, some of these places might actually have real avodah zarah. Okay, Rabbi Ari Leibowitz is talking about this, and he said like someone went and told him that he went to this place, and they actually had like a real avodah zarah, and there was like some sort of rites they were doing before they were making the food, right? Depending on where you are. And last thing, if there is no supervisor, there's no ne'emanut that anyone's checking on anything that's coming in and out of the store. You know, they might say they're vegan, but they want to compete with the next place, and it tastes better by throwing in, we put eggs in our, and I don't know what they're, they could put stuff in, eggs for us, not a big deal. They could put other things in to make it more tasty, and no one's checking on that. So we need a mashgiach. That was just on a vegan place, let alone if you have a dairy place, let alone if you have a meat place. You need people to be seeing that everything that's being ordered is being delivered. Okay, yes.
Okay, so I heard this story about like a water that didn't have a shkacha, and they found out they're putting like some kind of like alcohol in the water, and then alcohol is not kosher, so the water become like not kosher. So now okay. I'm thinking like, what about like in an airport, and they have a water fountain there. Can I drink from that water fountain?
Yeah, I don't think you have to worry that they're putting anything in the water. Yeah, water is fine. There are people that are super duper makbid not to have water on Pesach, because chametz is aser b'mashu, anything. So therefore, think about it. Anyone who ever did tashlich and threw his bread into the ocean, and now, you know, oh, I'm taking water from there. So it's only b'mashu on Pesach. So what do people do? They take all this water, they fill up buckets and bottles and bathtubs with water, and then they replenish their water from their bathtub. Okay, most people say that this mashu is not mash, doesn't really mean mashu, minuscule molecules of chametz, but there are people that are makbid on that. But in general, I would say most people do not think there's a problem with water. There was an issue of bugs in the water in New York, and they saw all these bugs in the water. I think Rav Schechter was makbid also not drinking the water from the tap in New York, I think so, if I remember correctly.
Public places, I've never had bugs in the water. Like an airport.
I guess anywhere. Really, you just have to check. You have to check, see the cleanliness of the water. I know you can't. You're right. You can't. You can put the water underneath the magnifying glass. Everyone's walking around with a little magnifying glass to go and see. But it has to be visible to the naked eye. We don't need to have a magnifying glass. We don't need a microscope. You know, if we had a microscope, we'd find something in any, probably even the bottled water. The bottled water would also, under a microscope, we'd probably find little stuff in there. It's what you'd see with the naked eye. So I don't know exactly how we go with the water. I have read articles on about it. I don't remember right now. I know there was a big thing in New York for a while. Okay, and there's a real need today for a mashgiach on nationally produced products. It used to be national produced products were no different than homemade products. You had flour and water and sugar and, I don't know, dates and raisins and chocolate. And today, there's hundreds of different chemicals and all sorts of products that you really need to be an expert. Because of technology, you need to know what are these things? What is, you know, this Z74, C, like, you know, all these different things. What is that? So there are people that are trained and they're actual experts and they know all these things. And therefore, there's a need. Also, some are not necessarily written. And like we said, many are not understood.
It's like the OUD products. And then you're always looking to be like, I don't see any milk on this list.
Right. And people still don't know what, they don't know what whey is. Right? So they go, oh, that just has whey. Okay. So you need to know what's going on. And last two quick things, Tvilat Kelim and Hachsharat Kelim. Tvilat Kelim, you only have to be tovel on metal and glass. There are people that are machmir and they do on other things.
Isn't glass like
stuffy? Glass, you have to do on glass. The question will be on glazed things. Let's say you have porcelain and it's glazed. So there you have people like different opinions, like China, right? If it's glazed, if it's not glazed, is that considered glass? Is that considered porcelain? Porcelain doesn't need to be. So you have like a coffee mug. Does that need to be just pottery? Or but it's glazed, maybe it does. So there you'll have a machloket. Certainly you only make a bracha on glass and metal. And the idea is, or changing status. It's like someone who converts, changes status from a non-Jew to a Jew. So these kelim that were previously owned by a non-Jew, so now I'm buying them and I put them in the mikvah and they're now Jewish kelim. Then you have hachsharat kelim. This is where you chafed up something and you need to kasher it. So the most important rule when it comes to hachsharat kelim is kibolo kach polto. Anyone know what that means?
The way it was like made treif, but you have to like kosher it now.
Good. Kibolo means the way it was swallowed, the way that the taste was absorbed. That's how you expunge the taste. So if it was through water, you cooked. So we do what's it called?
Oil.
And what's that called in Hebrew? Hagalat kelim. Hagala, right? If you remember for Pesach, sometimes you have humongously big urns and you throw all your pots in there. Okay.
It's the biggest pot you have in the
right. So yeah, hagalat kelim. You don't need to go to the shul. You can do it on your own. Take the biggest pot. You put in silverware. You put in other things. And what's interesting about Hagala as opposed to Tefillah, you don't even have to do it all at once. Tefillah, it's all got to be submerged. Hagala, you can do half of the kli, then you spin the kli, you get the other half. You could, you know, just put it in the boiling hot water. That's what was cooked. Let's say it wasn't cooked. Let's say you trafed up something over a fire. So then you do what's called Libun. And you burn it out. So with an oven. The way that you could do it, if you have a self-clean oven, you put on self-clean, and whatever was absorbed, the chametz that was absorbed pre-Pesach, you now expel by putting it on self-clean. If you know self-cleaning oven, so there's different opinions, one on the highest temperature for what, an hour and a half, whatever it is, and you say, okay, again, the idea would be, the most I could have cooked it on is the highest temperature. So that's the way it went in, that's the way I get it out. So that is what was done by, you know, everyone before they had self-cleaning ovens. Now pretty much everyone has self-cleaning ovens. That's the easiest way. Then it gets way hotter than anything you ever might have dared to cook on. And you burn it out. And that's even possibly called Libun Gamor. And this is the general rules of Libun and Hagala for Hachsharas Kelim. All right.